From KUOW, this is The Record. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm Ross Reynolds, and we're broadcasting live from Button Makers in Georgetown.
This is The Record's second official remote broadcast, and our goal is to give you listeners a picture of the issues at play in this specific neighborhood.
You know, the best way to get to know a neighborhood is to talk to the neighbors. We sent our esteemed colleague, Andy Hurst, out to chat up local residents.
He asked them about the best and the worst aspects of living in Georgetown.
I'd say the best thing is that it's kind of like a small town, and there's all kinds of renegades here. I would say there's a lot of artistic people who live and work in Georgetown, and you see a lot of different versions of being human here.
Okay. It's a pretty down-to-earth neighborhood. I think it fancies itself a down-to-earth neighborhood, which probably is equal parts earnestness and pretension.
The best thing about Georgetown to me is architecture and the history, that the story that the buildings tell.
People, the community. Everybody kind of knows everybody else. You can't walk, you know, three blocks in this neighborhood without having a conversation with at least two or three people before you get to the other end of your walk.
Okay. The worst thing? They changed the parking, too. You can only have two-hour parking on the street now. You used to get to park here all day.
Air quality? Air quality's terrible. Lots of noise.
The pollution, as you've probably heard from just about everybody. Harder to get over colds.
And as you heard there, pollution is on the minds of many Georgetown residents. You're listening to The Record live from Georgetown with Ross Reynolds. I'm Marcy Silman. Live from one of the most neighborly neighborhoods I've visited, this is The Record. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm Ross Reynolds. Georgetown is surrounded by industry. Planes, we've been seeing them flying right over our heads, trucks and trains. Georgetown is also part of the Lower Duwamish Waterway Superfund site. Yeah, you can hear that train in the background.
Yep.
The Environmental Protection Agency put it on its national priorities list back in 2001.
Industry's been a part of this community for more than a century, and the impact of all this manufacturing and activity can be found not only in the land, but also in the health of the people who live here.
Our producer, Arwin Nix, asked people about their concerns on pollution and the environment here in Georgetown.
Mostly that dust compiles in this neighborhood about five times as faster than any other place I've ever lived or worked before. Obviously, that means that the air is dirty, and that's concerning because I know that whatever dust I am not seeing, I'm probably breathing in as well.
I'm glad to see that there's been a lot of cleanup effort going towards the Duwamish, and I'd like to see that kind of effort be put forth in the rest of the South, Seattle and Georgetown in general. It seems to have cleaned up a lot in the last 10 years that I've been here.
I'm not worried about Georgetown specifically. I feel like Seattle in general, especially with the Duwamish River, it's something that we should be concerned about. But for me, it's more of Seattle as a whole than just Georgetown specifically.
My main concerns about the pollution in Georgetown is that I believe there's a higher incidence of lung cancer, and that somewhat concerns me, especially for people who have young children who live here.
There are several factors that affect the health of people living in Georgetown, things like poverty and access to health care. But environmental conditions are a real concern.
Lynn Gould is the executive director of Just Health Action, and she's an expert on environmental health and social justice issues in Seattle. Earlier this year, Gould released a study that compared environmental exposures and health problems in different zip codes throughout Seattle.
The data was drawn from the U.S. Census and the Environmental Protection Agency. KUOW's environment reporter, Ashley Ahern, asked her how Georgetown measured up.
You know, we do have toxic exposures down there, and specifically those toxic or chemical concerns or worries are the fact that the airport is right there. So there's not only air pollution, but there's also noise pollution. And then there's probably, you know, toxic chemicals left over from industry around the area. And so we've got noise, toxic pollution. But then we also have what I refer to as an adverse built environment. And so there's really, really fantastic built environment issues around there, like lots of trees, good sidewalks, good community spaces to go play. But then there's these adverse built environment issues about no sidewalks along East Marginal Way, the fact that there's little access to the quote-unquote polluted Duwamish River. And so when we think about these exposures, we have to think about them all cumulatively to realize how they might affect health.
And from your data, the cumulative health impact assessment you released, there are some real health outcomes that are quantifiable for this zip code. Not saying you can directly correlate or causally link the two, the exposures with the health outcomes, but tell me what happens to people when they live in this place?
Well, we have done a cumulative health impact assessment study, and we looked at it by zip code. And when we looked at 98108, which is Georgetown and South Park and Beacon Hill, we saw that there was really significant health issues in that area, in that 98108 zip code, compared to other zip codes in Seattle. So, for example, people who live in Laurelhurst live on average to be 86 years old, where people in South Park and Georgetown live to be 73 years old. So just imagine what that would be like, not to have your parents live to be 86 years old versus 73. That's 13 extra years that you don't get to be with your family members.
And what kind of health problems will they see compared to other neighborhoods in their lifetime in Georgetown?
So the health problems that we see are they're more likely to be obese. They're more less likely to have health insurance. They're more likely to have diabetes, less leisure time because they work so hard. They are more likely to smoke, more likely to have hypertension. The assault hospitalization rates are higher because crime is higher. They have higher asthma hospitalization rates because of air pollution, and they're more likely to die of stroke. And then there's also drug and alcohol issues. And that's all manifested or partly manifested in the fact that we see larger heart disease death rates. In Georgetown, you are 2.5 times more likely to die of heart disease than you are in Laurelhurst.
Wow. I love Georgetown, though. And mm-hmm. the people that live there love Georgetown. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
I love Georgetown, too. And what's so cool about Georgetown is I personally believe that they have what we refer to as in the health world as community cohesion. When you talk about community cohesion, you're really talking about the glue or the bond that holds a community together. And there, what I find so amazing about them is that they realize that even though, and I've talked to them, I've gone to community meetings and talked to them, they've said, we know we have these health issues, but we feel that we have the power to act on them. And I, you know, talked to one woman relatively recently, and she said, if not for me, you know, maybe I'll die at a younger age, but I can fight for this for my children.
From your perspective, I mean, would you live in Georgetown?
I have to admit that when I walk down those streets and I see how it's improving, it's tempting. It's really tempting. I mean, the Superfund site is being cleaned up and there's these new access areas being created and there's a new environment that's very, very appealing. And I love the arts community as well. And I love the people too. I mean, they are some of the nicest people. I mean, I kind of think about how here I live on a pretty fancy area of Seattle. I live on Capitol Hill. And I know more people in Georgetown and South Park than I do on Capitol Hill. And I walk all over Capitol Hill. But I think it's just that there's this sense of community where you say hello to people. And there's a bonding. There's a community. They have community spaces and they're proud of their community spaces. And I'm not sure I can say that for where I live. I mean, there is, but they're like party spaces in a way.
Lynn Gould is the executive director of Just Health Action. She spoke with KUOW's Ashley Ahern. And you're listening to The Record live from Georgetown here on KUOW.
This is The Record, coming to you from Georgetown. I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm Marcy Silman. Seattle's Georgetown neighborhood means a lot of different things to the people who live and work there. As you've heard, for some people it's about art and creation. For others, it's about bars, restaurants, and nightlife. But for Georgetown resident Justin Howell, it's all about family. Justin has lived in this neighborhood for nearly 10 years. He and his wife, Anna, are the parents of two small boys. Swift is 3.5 and Ewan's 9 months old. Raising Kids in Georgetown presents some unique challenges. As you've heard, pollution's an ongoing concern, and the industrial landscape can be a little bit unpredictable and dangerous for kids. But there are some hidden benefits to raising children here, and Justin Howell's with me to share his perspective. Hi, thanks for coming by. Oh,
thanks for having me on.
What brought you and your family to Georgetown in the first place?
Oh, I think about this a lot. I don't think Georgetown is usually a neighborhood, that you would consider when there's, you know, a broad range of neighborhoods to choose to raise children. But for me, you know, I've always really been into the wilderness, and I guess unexpectedly, when I stumbled onto Georgetown years and years ago, I realized it wasn't wilderness that I was in love with so much as wildness. And
it felt wild here.
It was very much. It felt like some sort of, you know, old timey wilderness outpost down here, surrounded by a sort of no man's land.
Well, you were childless when you moved here.
That's right.
When you and your wife decided to start a family, did you consider maybe moving somewhere else?
We did. We looked at a couple other neighborhoods in the area, as everybody would. And honestly, I had been here for several years before getting married and before deciding to have children, and we actually moved up to Capitol Hill. That's where my wife and I sort of started our relationship. But in our sort of citywide search, you know, we really only considered the South End, where we feel very connected to that. My wife works for Seattle Public Schools. But in looking for houses, we just really fell in love with the neighborhoods, and it was very clear that the community that had been building here over the years was going to be agreeable to raising children.
Now, some of the statistics I've read say that there's about 1,700 permanent residents down in Georgetown. How many of them have kids your kids' age?
Geez, that's a great question. We tried to sort of quantify that a little bit through a survey that we put together for other reasons. It's really actually a difficult thing to say. I guess if I were just to look around, you know, my immediate circle of friends, there's probably about a dozen children, but there's a whole bunch more that I don't know too. My best guess would be between 12 and 24 families with children.
Are there specific things that you do with your kids in Georgetown?
Oh man, absolutely. I mean, the summertime is amazing here for kids. You wouldn't think.
What sort of things do you do in the summer?
Well, we got a spray park here. We've got several actually really great parks. The Oxbow Park with the iconic Hat and Boots. The spray park down here at the Homer Playfields. And then there's also a couple riverfront parks that are kind of more secret, people don't know about, but they're great for fishing and they're great for hanging out.
We keep asking people about the best secrets of Georgetown, so I'm guessing you're not going to tell us. I'm talking with Justin Howell. He's a Georgetown resident, father of two very small kids. Is there an elementary school in Georgetown?
There isn't in Georgetown proper, but we have one very, very close, just up on South Beacon Hill. In fact, we frequently ride a bicycle. I don't know if you know about a long-tail bicycle, but it's got a big seat on the back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I frequently take my son to and from school via bicycle. It's only about a mile from here, and it actually is one of the higher quality elementary schools in the South End. It's one of the only elementary schools in the South End to receive a 5 rating from Seattle Public Schools. So
you feel pretty good about it.
Oh, we're very
education.
Proud of that fact, yeah.
We've read we've talked some about the industry down here. We've also heard about things like a high concentration of registered sex offenders, crime. What kinds of concerns do you and your wife have when it comes to this neighborhood and possible dangers?
Sure, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of hard to explain the attitude exactly, but it's one of cautious optimism. We live our lives. We don't let concerns about the environment or predatory individuals, you know, dominate the culture of our family. And I think that's pretty true for most folks down here. We're aware. There definitely is a heightened awareness, and I think that bleeds into all different aspects of living down here. So there is a heightened awareness, but I certainly in no way think that we allow it to dominate the way we raise our children or the way we interact with our neighbors.
We just heard the interview with Lynn Gould talking about pollution. A lot of people have cited that as a major concern. How do you balance that with kids' health, concerns about the environment, love for your community, and the future of your kids?
Sure. I mean, I think again, it's in line with the answer to the last question. We certainly don't let it dominate our experience here, but we are aware of it. And I think the key really is just as a person who's engaged in their community and engaged with their children, we really are trying to make progress in whatever way we can. We know what Georgetown is. Nobody's trying to fundamentally change the character or even ask these maybe more polluting infrastructure elements to go anywhere. That's certainly not what we would want to do. But we are aware of it, and I think there's a lot of ground for cooperation between the neighborhood and the residential and the industrial areas to sort of improve environmental conditions.
Now, Justin, I've just asked you all these questions about icky things, but what do you like best about raising your family here?
I think you've probably been hearing a lot about the community down here. I love knowing that my children are being brought up in such a creative, an explosively creative environment, I would say. That's how I would describe it. It's not just creative. There's so much enthusiasm down here for fun and festivity, and the attitudes are wonderful. And, really, it's surprisingly kid-friendly. We're surrounded by huge machinery that kids just love, airplanes, trains, trucks. You know, my son Swift can't get enough of it, so...
Yeah, I have a son. There's a truck gene that they're born
yes,
with.
Yes, exactly.
I imagine, given the small residential population that is here all the time, that a lot of people might know Swift and Ewan?
Oh, yeah. In fact, probably one of the reasons that I'm here today is because someone saw, Swift and Ewan at on the street or recommended that we come and talk to you. So yeah, you do become kind of an icon bringing kids around in an environment like this. You're certainly noticeable compared to all the hard hats and fluorescent vests, that's for sure.
Justin Howell is the father of two young sons. Swift is 3 and a half, and Ewan's 9 months old. He and his wife, Anna, are raising them in Georgetown. Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me.
This is our live broadcast from Button Makers in Georgetown. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm Ross Reynolds. Coming up, we're going to have the KOW News Quiz. Every week, we test on how closely you've been listening. Now, to play the news quiz, you have to qualify. And to qualify, it's a little different this week. You have to come down to Button Makers here in Georgetown. So put down that beer, finish off that coffee, drop that volleyball if you're at that indoor beach over at Sandbox, and come on over to Button Makers. Find our producer, Hannah Byrne. She'll be pretty easy to find. She's got a red jacket on, some really loud pants. We call her 5 Feet of Fury. Find Hannah and answer this question. What initiative in a small city south of Seattle survived a recall vote? What was that initiative? If you can answer that question and be the first one to tell 5 Feet of Fury, you will be playing the KUOW News Quiz on the air and have a chance to get your face atop the KUOW Facebook page all weekend with all that attendant glory. So hop on over.
Yeah, look for 5 Feet of Fury. I'm going to call her that from now on. We're here in the daytime. It's lively, but the industrial part of Georgetown neighborhood is dark at night. Long shadows cast from large buildings create a sense of mystery and maybe some fear, too. Less than a mile away from here, in the more residential part of the neighborhood, the lights are on. People are home. They know who and where their neighbors are. So what are the challenges of protecting a neighborhood of two extremes, industrial and residential, two extremes that exist side by side? Well, the man in charge of doing that is John Hayes. He's captain of Seattle Police Department's South Precinct, which includes Georgetown. And it's been very fun just chatting with you, John Hayes, even before we turned on the microphone.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
What kind of crime would happen in the industrial part of this neighborhood that we might not see in the residential part of it?
You know, we'll have crime that's associated with metal theft.
Metal theft,
yes. And stealing copper, stealing other heavy metal materials that will go to recycle, things like that. Or you might get a big tractor trailer.
Well, it's not, as I mentioned, a totally abandoned neighborhood. There are people who are here all the time. What role do neighbors play in helping you police the industrial part of town?
The biggest part of policing is the eyes and ears of the community, how they relay the information to us. And it's something that, we constantly have to nourish, because when things are good, sometimes people's their guard will drop a little bit, and we have to keep that going, because, keeping this a safe community. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we want to see the families grow, and we want to see more families come into this area.
So what are the sorts of things that need to happen to encourage that kind of growth?
you bring in a business, for one, so you have to have local shopping. You have to be able to have individuals that have an appreciation for adult life as well as the youth. The parks are being regenerated, things like that.
So what do you as Seattle police need to do to help foster that?
One, we kind of market the area,
to tell you
the truth. You know, we're involved with so many subcommittees that we really want to encourage our parks departments and our street design use and all. We want to bring that together so that and give input as to how we see it can help the community as well as us as law enforcement goes.
I'm talking with the South Precinct Captain of Seattle Police Department, John Hayes. About 1,700 or so people live here. You're in charge of a lot of different neighborhoods. You oversee police who patrol them. How is this particular community different from the others?
I think that it's a very eclectic community. It is a real artsy community as well as a very serious business-minded community. We have individuals that come in from all over the region to come into an industry business mm-hmm. here to work. But we also have those individuals that actually live here. And I kind of, you know, just to help me, I divide it by what takes place south of Michigan and what is north of Michigan Street. Because it's more industrial north, residential south.
Somebody called this the hip part of Georgetown where we're sitting right now.
Oh, it is.
This is the hip part of Georgetown.
So cool. I mean, you really want to party. You really want to have some fun, good time. You come right to this stretch right down here.
Now, some residents have told us that they feel like if the city of Seattle doesn't want to deal with something, say, sex offenders, that they stick it here in Georgetown. Do you agree with that assessment?
No, I don't agree with it. And I think that although they have a concentration of sex offenders that are in this general area, and probably more concentrated than you would see in other communities where sex offenders exist as well. But it's noted here because of the concentration of housing. Now, also, we're looking at a time when individuals were looking for lower cost to have housing that's more out of the way. But it wasn't to say, oh, yeah, this is a bad situation. Let's send it down to Georgetown. Let's go south.
It was just that it was affordable.
Yeah.
I know that the department as a whole is moving towards something called data-driven policing. Mm-hmm. In other words, thinking about where crime might occur and then actually putting people on the street, eyes on the street. Mm-hmm. Are there beat cops for Georgetown specifically?
Not specifically. We have to get a few more officers in order to have the beat cop that walks around this area on a consistent basis. Would I like it? I would love it. I think this community deserves something like that, but maybe in the future we might be able to pull something like that off.
Well, when it comes to public safety, until mm-hmm. that time is that there's money, how can you deploy the residents of the community to serve that function?
You know, we deploy them in a variety of ways. They participate in the Crime Prevention Council, the Merchants Association, as well as some live fairly close to here. So we come down and maybe a squad will have a party down here, you know, go to dinner, go to lunch, things like that. So now that's the real nice side of how we deploy. The other side is that we do take statistics. So we may see a rise in auto theft, car prowls, metal thefts of some sort, you know, things like that. So now we're going to be very specific about which officers, where they need to be, and how they need to be. And we definitely keep an eye on the parks.
Now, before we went on the air, you told me how much you love this neighborhood. Just briefly, how do you characterize the community?
Oh, just like Justin. The person on before me, he was so cool. It, what was really nice about it was that it is a city within the city down here, and everyone kind of has that network piece to them, and they really enjoy being here. You know, I enjoy coming down here.
Well, we're glad to have you with us today. Captain John Hayes is the head of Seattle Police Department South Precinct. Mm-hmm. It's based on Beacon Hill, but it includes Georgetown, where we are today. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
It's The Record with Ross Reynolds. I'm Marcy Silman.
It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds with Marcy Silman, and since we're in Georgetown, Marcy, we couldn't leave out Fantagraphics.
Nope.
The graphic novel publisher is very much a part of this community. Steve Scheer went to their store with Nancy Pearl.
At the corner of South Vale and Airport Way in the old Georgetown Bank building is Fantagraphics, which they share with Georgetown Records. We're at Fantagraphics side of it now with Nancy Pearl talking about browsing the shelves and what's on there at Fantagraphics. And Larry Reed's here as well. Larry, if I were to start my browsing, I would start with Little Nemo in Slumberland, because when I was growing up and starting to read about comics, Little Nemo was one of the first ones that got me thinking about all the possibilities that could be contained within the panel. So yeah. that's the one that sort of started changing my brain. Do you have one that changed yours?
Well, I think a comic that speaks to me is Peter Bagg's Hate comics that have been collected in two large volumes. One is called Buddy in Seattle. Buddy was the protagonist who sort of personified Seattle's grunge era. I mean, but Peter was not only satirizing that grunge counterculture, but he also helped sort of develop the attitude and aesthetic of that whole youth movement that really sort of had an impact on a global level.
So that's Peter's. Now, Nancy, what's yours?
Well, I am a little disappointed, although they might be hidden. I was looking for the Archie and Betty and Veronica and Jughead comics that we used to sneak into our house and have to and just read. And of course, I always loved Betty.
Did you always loved Betty because she was the underdog?
She was the underdog. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, if we don't have that and you're browsing, we're next to you browse.
I mean, I just like seeing the range of books that you see on these shelves. But maybe one of the books that's on the shelf that I think we absolutely need to mention is Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics. And again, I think for anybody who has any doubts about, who wonders what the appeal of comics are, and let's not call them graphic novels since that's such a misnomer. Let's make a resolution, at least the two of us, Steve, to just refer to them as comics from now on. But what Scott McCloud does here is in a very easy to read, easy to digest way, shows us why comics work and explains, for example, I never knew why comics were in different frames, I guess, and it's because they're separated. There's always a space between them, and that gutter has particular. That's what it's called. That gutter has a particular use in the comic. This is a fabulous, fabulous book.
What I like about this store, especially, is you could see the evolution of the vocabulary. You're talking about gutters. And so from Little Nemo or from Crazy and Ignatz, and then the evolution of the ones I like Terry and the Pirates.
Terry and the Pirates, right. Yeah, gosh, I remember those in the Detroit News.
Or Pogo.
I Go Pogo, Dick Tracy. It's sort of an interesting, it takes you from your past into the future almost, or at least into your present.
I bought a collection of Walt and Skeezix, the old Gasoline Alley cartoons.
Gasoline Alley.
And again, it's this idea that you see how the vocabulary of comics is evolving and changing, but looking for core emotional feelings. I mean, we think of them as jokes sometimes, right? And we look at Peanuts,
right.
But even Peanuts is about core emotional feelings.
Well, Calvin and Hobbes even more so. Calvin and Hobbes, I think, is just probably, I think, one of the greatest comics ever done.
Well, here's some of the early Fantagraphics stuff and some of the modern comics.
Well, we talked a little bit last, I mentioned last week how I think that memoirs do particularly well in comic format, and one of our local cartoonists here and writers is Ellen Forney, and she wrote a memoir called Marbles, Mania, Depression, Michelangelo, and Me. And I would say if people enjoyed Alison Bechdel's Fun Home, which is now coming up to be a Broadway show, then they will love Marbles by Ellen Forney. Greg Thompson's Blankets is another classic. If you haven't ever read,
No, I've never heard of them.
Never read. Oh, more, that's
more
his
recent book.
Yes,
Habibi.
Yes,
It's sort of a follow-up to Blankets. It's a little more abstract, but really interesting, sort of out of time and place, kind of memoir in some abstract sense. But it's a delightful book.
Of course, the wrap on the comics is that this is a visual form, and telling stories is either oral or we're reading them, and reading is a higher intellectual plane. I mean, that's the argument that had been for a long time.
But then if you follow that argument, you wouldn't go to any foreign films that are subtitled. I mean, I always liken getting accustomed to reading a graphic novel where you have to look at the picture and you have to look at the book, at the text. The words, they have to be more than the sum of their parts to have it be a great comic.
All right, we're wandering Fantagraphics in Georgetown with Nancy Pearl and Larry Reed, who's the curator here. You can come in and browse all the books. Think of it as Georgetown's library. In the heart of cultural Georgetown is Fantagraphics. It's The Record. I'm Steve Scherer with Nancy Pearl. All right, Nancy, go off and wander the stacks.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
It's time once again to play Public Radio's sixth most popular show, the KUOW News Quiz. Earlier this hour, we asked people to come down to find one of our producers, 5 Foot of Fury, Hannah Byrne, and answer this question to see if they qualified to play the news quiz. The question was, what close election victory survived a recount this week? And of course, the answer, Prop 1 in SeaTac, which raises the minimum wage to $15 an hour. It won by the same margin that it won the first time around, 77 votes. Arwen Nix, our producer, who is our lucky contestant today?
Our lucky contestant today is Matt Whitman. He is an architect. He works here in Georgetown. He's also fluent in Spanish. Hola.
Fluent in Spanish. Buenos dias. You can answer your questions in English, however. You know how we're playing this game? If you get two of these three questions correct, your face will be atop the KUOW Facebook page. Fame and fortune and social credit will flow your way. Are you ready to play?
I can't wait.
Okay, here we go. Question number one. This week, Time magazine named their Person of the Year. Which of these people was awarded that title? Was it Rob Ford, Glenn Danzig, or Pope Francis? The Person of the Year from Time magazine, Pope Francis, Glenn Danzig, or Rob Ford?
Let's go with Pope Francis.
You are correct. Question number two. This week, my esteemed colleague Marcy Silman spoke to members of a band named after a character in a Spike Lee movie. What's the name of the band and the character? Is the name of the band and character Radio Reader? Is the name of the band and character Radio Rahim? Or is the name of the band and character Radio Flyer?
Radio Flyer.
Sorry. Here's the last question. Bertha, the world's largest tunneling machine, making its way under downtown Seattle, has been making waves lately. My question for you is, what is Bertha named after, Matt? Is Bertha named after Boxcar Bertha, that fine 1972 Martin Scorsese film? Is it named after Bertha Knight Landis, the first female mayor of an American city, which is, of course, with Seattle? Or is Bertha an acronym for Boring Earth Rig Titanium Helium Alloy? Matt, can you answer that question? What's Bertha named after?
The third choice.
Bertha, Boring Earth Rig Titanium Helium Alloy?
Yes.
You're going to stay with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you sure you're going to stay with that?
Are you sure you're going to stay with that?
Absolutely.
Oh, I am so sorry, Matt. One of three. You will not be going up on the KOW Facebook page. I wish you a happy life, nevertheless. And thanks so much for being a good sport and playing the conversation, the KUOW quiz.
Thank you.
And, of course, Bertha named after Bertha Knight Landis, first female mayor of a Western city.
You'll never get that question wrong again.
You'll never do it again. The Record is produced by Amina Al-Sadi, Jason Pagano, and Joshua McNichols.
David Hyde's our man in the studio today.
Christine Strike and 5 Feet of Fury herself, Hannah Byrne.
Arwen Nix and Andy Hurst led the production for today's show with help from editor Jim Gates.
And, of course, our ship would sink without the venerable Bernard Ouellette. Wish you were here, Byrne.
You're listening to KU. WOW Seattle.
This is The Record, live from Georgetown.